This is a public service announcement sponsored by Just Blaze and the good folks at Rockefeller Records.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Welcome into another edition of the Make It Bootleg podcast presented by the Boston Herald. Evan Lazar here, as always, with Adam Thurston. And we have a lot to get to, Adam, so let's just start right away here. And after this Super Bowl loss, obviously the story of the week is Malcolm Butler and the Malcolm Butler situation. You know, we were just talking about it, and it is by far the weirdest thing that has ever happened to a Patriots team or really in a Super Bowl that we can remember in terms of a benching of a player. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, like I was saying earlier, everything I've heard conflicts with each other. So I can't, you know, come out here and say whatever he did or didn't do, because I've heard both, you know, sides that, you know, that it was just a coach's decision and it was a, you know, pre-planned strategy thing. And I've also heard that it was, you know, there was some disciplinary things involved. So, you know, when it comes to that, conflicting reports. So, you know, when you look at what Ian Rappaport said, that it is a sort of a perfect storm, so to speak, of things that led to it, then I, you know, maybe that's it. But, you know, it's very strange, and we were saying, you know, it's the craziest thing we've seen in the Super Bowl. So I remember when it, you know, when the game started, I didn't really notice it until like the second series, and then, you know, you keep waiting for him to come out onto the field, and he never did, and it was just so strange. There's no real, you know, no matter what happens, no matter what ends up coming out, there's no good explanation for it, is what I think.
No, you know? And it's tough because, you know, on one hand, it is Bill Belichick, and this guy has won you 5 Super Bowl rings, 8, you know, appearances, 12 AFC championship games. I mean, everyone knows the stats at this point. So at some point, you got to give him the benefit of the doubt. And and at some point also, you look at it and you say, okay, you know, it's easy for me to say that Malcolm Butler should have been in the game. But at the same time, I don't have all the information. You know, right. I don't know what he did. I don't know what he looked like in practice. And another thing is, you know, as much as all of us can analyze this game and break it down and watch the film and do all that great stuff, Bill Belichick knows what the play call is on every single play, where everybody's supposed to go, and we don't. You know, we can watch a game, and I can watch a game back on you know, the tape and say, okay, this didn't work, that didn't work, this guy probably should have gone there, this guy probably should have gone there. But at the end of the day, only the coaching staff and the players really know exactly where everybody's supposed to go. My point being that maybe Malcolm Butler was having a worse season than we thought.
Yeah.
Maybe Malcolm Butler, I looked at it, and I said, okay, he's had a down year for Malcolm Butler. You know, he hasn't been as good as he was the 2 previous years, but he's still a solid number 2 corner. Maybe they looked at it and they said Eric Rowe is actually better than Malcolm Butler is now.
Right.
And maybe that is the case. Then in that point, you know, when it gets to halftime, when it's the third quarter, when Johnson Badamosi misses that tackle on third down, at what point do you say to yourself, all right, you know, maybe we should try something else. Maybe right. We should throw Malcolm in the game. If it was a team rules violation, then fine. I respect that. I think that team rules are important. I think that we all kind of, you know, especially Patriots fans, kind of get on the Pittsburgh Steelers for this exact thing, right? You know, they let their players run their locker room. We think that that's bad. If it was a team rules violation, then they should have sent him home. He should have been inactive for the game. Take his jersey, send him home. that would be, I would have accepted that. But to make him stand out there on the sideline and just not play and clearly be, you know, essentially, it felt, I guess what I'm saying is, to wrap this up, it felt spiteful.
Right.
It felt like it was personal.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is, and I mean, as a fan, I'm angry because, you know, that's a ridiculous way to lose the Super Bowl, is out of something petty like that. But right. On the other hand, I feel even worse for Tom Brady, really, because he had his team in position to win a sixth Super Bowl. He threw 505 yards in a damn Super Bowl. That's a playoff record. That's not just a Super Bowl record. That's a playoff record. 1,000 playoff games in the history of the league. Tom Brady has the record. And in order to prove a point, or in order to make an example of him, Bill Belichick stood Malcolm Butler out there on the sideline and didn't play him in the biggest game of the year.
Right. I will say this, though. For as big of a controversy as this is, I don't think they necessarily win the game if Butler plays.
You know? I don't know. You can never say for sure.
You can never say for sure. That offense was something that even before the game, I was, you know, convinced was going to put up some points.
Yeah.
I didn't think 41. I did think they could get into the 20s in the first half. I was not surprised by that. Look, that offense is way better than a lot of Patriots people in general gave it credit for. I thought like 21 or 22 points in the first half wasn't out of the realm of possibility. But my thought process was, in the second half, like a lot of these games, they'd make adjustments and the offense would sort of taper off.
It never happened.
Bowles was never rattled once. I mean, he was barely ever hit. The same issues that were in the first half were in the second half. He was making some great throws, and the Eagles were just the better team that game. You know, I think, you know, you can point at, for Butler, you can point at some of the tackling issues. He's one of their best tacklers.
Yeah.
And on any level of the defense, and they were horrendous tackling this game, horrendous from every level.
I've never seen the Belichick team tackle worse.
It was awful.
It was bad.
It was awful. So, you know, to pin it on one guy and say, well, if he played, well, yeah, but also, I mean, even when the Eagles ran the ball, you know, in places where Butler wouldn't have been, you know, they didn't set the edge at all. There were multiple runs where, you know, the running back was not touched 4 or 5 yards down the field. I mean, and then you look at that LeGarrette Blount touchdown run. I don't think he was even touched until he was inside the 5 yard line, maybe even the one.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, you can say Butler this, Butler that. Where are the rest of the defenders on that? I mean, nobody on the defense really played well, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. And the one thing I will say, and you can never say for certain that one player, I 100% agree with one player, is going to completely change the fate of the game. But I think that it's safe to say that it put the team in a place where they really had no chance to stop the Eagles.
Right.
You know, I think that it would have mitigated things. First of all, I mean, the trickle-down effect is really what, you know, you look at, right? You know, the fact that they had to move Patrick Chung into the slot and play him as a slot corner when he was a safety against Nelson Aguilar, who's a really good receiver, you know, that was a matchup that just directly went from, you know, maybe being more closer to 50-50 to heavily favoring the Eagles. And that's, and I love Chung, and Chung is a great player and has, and was one of the better players, you know, on the Patriots this season in the last couple of years, but he's not, you know, he doesn't have the coverage skills in man coverage to cover a wide receiver like Nelson Aguilar. You know, maybe if you want to put him against a guy like, you know, that a slot receiver that's not quite as good or quite as talented, something different, but Aguilar is too good for him to cover in man. then you have the fact that it put Jordan Richards on the field. You know, that obviously is it's indirectly caused by Malcolm Butler, right? You know, it's not like Malcolm Butler would have been playing Jordan Richards' spot in the defense. It's that Chung would have been playing Jordan Richards' spot and Malcolm Butler would have been in the slot. Or, you know, Rowe would have been in the slot and Malcolm Butler would have been outside or whatever it would have been. You know, and the way that this Eagles team and Peterson, you know, Doug Peterson, to all of his credit, was, you know, incredible. But what he did was he just picked up matchups the entire game. You know,
yeah.
He picked at Patrick Chung, Eric Rowe, Kyle Van Noy, Jordan Richards. Those four guys, he looked at it and he said, all right, I'm just going to throw at them all day. I'm not going to throw at Gilmore. I'm not going to throw at McCourty. I'm going to throw at those four guys and I'm going to torch them. And between them and Marquise Flowers, who gave up the touchdown to Corey Clement, 307 yards.
Right.
By Nick Foles to those five guys. Completions.
And that touchdown to Ertz at the end was on McCourty. I mean,
right.
None of those guys played well. I mean, even when they were in zone, they were wide open. You know, like they found soft spots. You know, Foles made some good throws, but, you know, the other thing is, you know, I just feel like you have to give a ton of credit to the Eagles.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like, you know, a lot of this blaming of Butler and like not being in the game is fine. And there is a trickle down effect. And, you know, it also hurts that when Chung got hurt, you know, that took, you know, there's another guy you're not, you know, you're relying on who's hurt. You know, I mean, Chung was clearly hurt and you couldn't put in a Malcolm Butler to help fill that role. But I mean, some of the catches early were incredible that I don't even think Butler would prevent. Like the first touchdown to Alshon Jeffrey, that was pretty decent coverage and he made a great catch. What are you going to do there?
Yeah.
You know, so I feel like part of this, definitely like Butler would have made a difference and all that. But I still feel like the Eagles were just flat out the better team and they proved it.
Yeah, and I am not disagreeing with that at all. Obviously, I think that the point is with Butler, to me, is that once it started getting off the rails for the Patriots, the only move they could have made was to put Butler in the game.
Oh, yeah.
100%. You know, that they had no other, there was no other, you know, adjustment or scheme related thing or coaching decision or what have you, you know, that they could have done differently, you know, because they tried everything. They really did. When you watch the tape, I mean, there's only so much that you can do as a coaching staff. Their guys just simply were worse than the Eagles players. You know, right. At some point in you and I, we break down this stuff every week and we get into the details of what exactly happens schematically and stuff like that. But at some point, you know, the 11 guys on one side of the field line up against the 11 guys on the other and one team wins. And yeah. And their players on every single spot all the way down the line, you pick a matchup, they were better.
Right.
You know, really the only guy in the secondary that you know, wasn't completely taken advantage of was Stephon Gilmore. And right. He had a good game, but every other guy in that secondary, the other five guys that played or really saw the field, you know, got beat at various times and were picked on. And and so, you know, Malcolm Butler, if you put him in the game, that was really their only, you know, that could have been an answer, but it wasn't gonna stop their running game. It wasn't going to fix the other four matchups on the field that favored the Eagles. You know, it just wasn't. And Doug Peterson, you know, to his credit, and Foles to his credit, were just incredible. I mean, an MVP performance from Nick Foles. Every throw, every read, I mean, he was just in his own.
Yeah.
He really was. You know, when you watch Foles, you know, in the past, one thing that we talked about before the Super Bowl was that he can get kind of disheveled when you take him off his first read. And he's not exactly the best processor.
Right.
Wasn't the case in the Super Bowl. He saw everything. Yeah. They threw a blitz, he saw it. They rotated a coverage, he saw it. They went from cover two to cover one, you know, at the snap, he saw it. I mean, it was incredible. And one thing that, you know, Peterson did that was kind of, you know, to help Foles along in these situations was he threw a lot of passes early on in the game, especially to the short middle and to his right, you know, to his throwing side, which is obviously an easier read for a right-handed quarterback. And Foles just picked them apart in those two areas of the field.
I think one of the things they did well was move the pocket a lot and cut the field in half a lot of times, especially early. I felt like he made throws that, you know, not necessarily were easy to see, but easier. You know, they'd roll him out one way, and he'd just see half the field, you know, and he made pretty good decisions when it came to that. And the thing was, when it came to those second and third reads, you didn't panic. Like, you'd see that on film before, like, yeah, we're talking about where you know, he just sort of, you know, he wouldn't make the right decision after that first read was gone, but he was in total control and he was poised. I do think part of that is that you didn't see much of a pass rush at all, which is what we've seen a lot of the year from the Patriots. But one of the things that you find in, you know, looking at this game is that it's hard to blitz this Eagles team, not just because their offensive line is so good, but if you put one-on-one matchups with their skill players, especially with what the Patriots had out there and not Butler, you're really asking for it. So I kind of felt like this was going to happen in some respects, but not to the extent that it.
Yeah, I mean, he was 15 of 20 against the blitz. They blitzed him 20 times, which is one of the highest rates the Patriots have had all season. I believe it's the second highest rate in the game all season, and he just torched it.
Yeah.
I mean, he just torched it. He ate it alive. And there was really nothing that they could do. And then on third down, you know, that's I talked about it before the game. I wrote about it, how great this Eagles third down offense was. They averaged 12 yards per play on third down. Yeah. They were unbelievable on third down. And they were in a lot of third and short and a lot of fourth and short, and they converted everything. Whether it was third and six or third and one, they were converting. Yeah. And they just couldn't get off the field. And the thing that's crazy about it, too, is that that's a legitimate 41 points. There's no pick sixes. Yeah. There's no weird field position stuff. This was a straight-up both teams had basically gotten the ball off kickoffs the entire game, and the Eagles drove the field every single time and scored 41 points.
Right.
And that's just, I mean, it's the worst defensive game of the Belichick era. And it's not just because it's the Super Bowl. It's a
historically bad defensive game for any team in the Super
Bowl. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the stakes obviously make it the worst game of the Belichick era by far. You know, but the statistics, I mean, it's the second most points that they've allowed in the Belichick era, and it's the most yards that they've allowed. So, right. And the points is only a 1 point shy of the 42 that they gave up to Kansas City in week one.
Right.
Is, you know, really ironic seeing that, it's basically the same offense.
Right. And in a way, it was worse than the Chiefs game because there were some big plays in that game. And I felt like at the very end, the Patriots almost gave up in that game. Whereas this game was competitive the whole way through, the Eagles were able to drive the ball. These weren't all like 70-yard plays. These were, you know, just boom, 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 boom down the field. And it just felt like you never felt that that big stop was coming. I remember tweeting when they forced that field goal. I was like, well, that's kind of like a punt in this game.
Yeah.
But it didn't end up mattering. And I just – one of the things that I really – you have to tip your cap to Peterson on is, you know, they came into this game as sort of a aggressive play calling, going for it on fourth down. They never wavered from that. And you can't you can't beat the Patriots, any Patriots team really, by sort of playing it safe. And they knew that, and they didn't think twice. And I think that was, you know, that whole attitude was a big reason why they won.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because the more I thought about it, I was like, you know, Doug Peterson is essentially Andy Reid with balls.
Right.
You know? Like they're the same guy. They call the same style of offense. That, you know, Andy Reid is obviously Doug Peterson's mentor, and you know it's the same stuff. And the thing that was frustrating for me watching it back was that the Patriots matched the Eagles the same exact way as they matched Kansas City in Week One. The same, you know, they took 11 personnel, 3 wide receiver sets, bunch formations, all that stuff that the Eagles did, RPO, and the Patriots matched it with nickel or dime with an extra safety in the exact same way. And they thought it would work the second time around without Malcolm Butler. Like, that's the part that I don't understand. And I don't know, you know, I've been racking my brain to try to figure out what they could have done differently because, you know, really with the guys that they had on the field, I'm just like not really sure. They tried blitzing. They tried zone. They tried man. They played cover one. They played cover two. I mean, they tried everything.
Right.
And it just wasn't working. The crux of the problem is that the Patriots can't stop 3 wide receiver sets.
Which is a bad thing in today's NFL.
Yeah, which is why everybody, you know, every defense plays nickel. Every offense plays 11 personnel these days.
But the weird thing about that is you look at their roster and you think, oh, they absolutely can.
Yeah.
You look at their roster and they got 3 good safeties, and if you put Butler on the field, Rowe, Gilmore, and Butler, those are pretty, that's a pretty good triple corner attack or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. But even, you know, like we were saying, you know, after the first quarter or so, Rowe settled down. You know, and he didn't allow a ton. But the thing about this Eagles offense that was so unique is that Ertz is a weapon, you know, and, you know, they have ways of hurting you in so many more ways. I mean, even Corey Clement, I mean,
he was a lot better than I thought. I slept on Corey Clement.
Well, I mean, the whole thing about this Eagles team offense and defense, they have depth. They have good depth.
Yeah.
They have quality depth, and you don't really see that on very many NFL teams because, you know, the salaries will get in the way and the good backups will end up leaving or the good starters, and then you really have to draft lights out and, you know, make good roster moves all the way through. But, you know, this team, you know, it really showed off its depth really at every position when you look at Foles. You know, I mean, the guy's a starting quarterback most places, you know, after this, especially, God.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
what random team, like, and you've got the blueprint now to making Nick Foles a stud quarterback. You just run with
Super Bowl MVP.
You run what the Eagles run and Nick Foles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not
that much different than what they ran with Chip Kelly.
No, you're right.
And Nick Foles tore it up with Chip Kelly too. You know, obviously they don't do it with quite the same pace, and you know there are differences, but it's a lot of you know, I would call it, you know, like pro style college. You know, where there's like some college elements, and then there, you know, West Coast College is what Mike Lombardi calls it.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he calls the Andy Reid offense. So, you know, it's not that much different from what Chip Kelly ran. It's not that much different than where the NFL seems to be going in general. And this is something that I'm sure that we'll talk about a lot this offseason, of how do the Patriots kind of take their defense and morph it to more fit the offenses that, you know, they're going up against with these read option offenses and spread concepts and stuff like that. But, you know, the point is the Eagles saw it on tape, or they saw the analytics like I saw them, and they saw that there's 2 things that the Patriots can't do at all, and they both involve stopping the run, and it's stopping the run out of 11 personnel and especially stopping the run out of shotgun.
Right.
You know, they averaged 7 yards per carry out of shotgun. 6.7.
That's crazy. Yeah, I mean, I remember we talked to one of my notebook pieces was talking to some of the, you know, towards the end of the notebook was talking to a couple of the Eagles players about what they see out of the Patriots on film. And, you know, one of the offensive linemen, it might have been Lane Johnson, I forget who it was telling me, well, what they're going to try to stop the run. They take away what teams do best, and they're going to try to stop the run. And, you know, after a couple of big running plays, you just saw it. Like, they're, you know, first of all, the Eagles' offensive line is awesome. You know, it's athletic. It's strong. They, you know, they put guys where they want to put them. But also, the Patriots really didn't, you know, they didn't set the edge well. When they forced cutbacks, there was nobody there, you know. A lot of times that, you know, we were talking about this before, about how the Eagles find a way to, you know, wall things off, and second level defenders are the only ones that get there after 4 or 5 yards. That happened again. You know, you saw a lot of runs where they cut inside, and the next thing you know, he's 4 or 5 yards down the field before he's even touched. And he isn't even being touched by a linebacker. He's getting tackled from behind by a defensive tackle. So, you know, and that blunt run was just sort of was just symptomatic of what you saw all game, where, you know, he's running and he's got nobody there. And by the time he's tackled, he's practically in the end zone. So yeah. It was just it was a total breakdown in that respect. They never really – there were some times where they passed. I'm like, why did you stop running? Everything's working.
They got into a point where they could – you know, they almost had a few plays where they didn't need to run it. You know, like, it was kind of gimmicky and it didn't work. You know, that screen that Marquise Flowers sniffed out was one of those, you know, and I was like, why didn't you just do what you were doing? Because there was no way that they were going to stop it. And the blunt run, the touchdown run, is really interesting to me because it kind of is a microcosm of what's wrong with this matchup with the Patriots. That was a six-man offensive line. Mm-hmm. So the Eagles went heavy. They had a tight end, Brent Celek, and they had 6 offensive linemen. So they had 7 guys across the line of scrimmage. The Patriots were in nickel.
Yeah.
They were in nickel. And I'm looking at it on the screen when I'm watching it back, and I'm like, what the heck are you doing?
Right.
You know, the only guy – the guy that's there to set the edge is James Harrison, and the guy behind him playing outside linebacker is a safety. It's Patrick Chubb.
Right.
And what happens is that Celek and the 6 offensive linemen, they combo block on Harrison. They kick him inside. Then Celek climbs to Patrick Chung, and then Blunt is gone.
Yeah.
He's gone. And I'm just looking at this, and I'm like, you know, how – when you saw 6 offensive linemen, when you saw 7 people with their hand in the ground on the line of scrimmage, why did you think it was a good idea to put 5 defensive backs on the field?
No.
And those were the little things that, you know, even we can get into Jordan Richards and all that stuff, you know – that is what it is to me. Obviously, we both, I think that Jordan Richards probably should not, you know, be on the field, especially in a Super Bowl, right? But the point of the matter is that they were one step behind Doug Peterson the entire game.
Yes.
And Doug Peterson was exceptional. You know, he called the game with balls, like I said, going for it on the fourth downs. Although, you know, I want to praise him, but at the same time, a lot of them I thought were no-brainers.
Right.
You know, the one before the half, I mean, really, what does a field goal do for you there? You know that Tom Brady's going to score 30-plus points.
Right.
So what does a field goal do for you there? And then late in the game when they went for it on 4th-and-1, you know, you can't punt the ball back to Brady. You're down 33-32. You punt it back to Brady, it's an 8-point game.
Right.
It's almost automatic. So – he can't punt it back, so they go for it, and they get it. And really, you know, what makes play callers great is their ability to pick out matchups. And, you know, Peterson, whether it was lining up guys in the slot, throwing to his running backs, or throwing to Ertz, you know, he was just on fire.
Yeah.
And it was incredible.
Yeah, and I want to see what you think about this, too. We watched a lot of Eagles film in the lead-up. I didn't really know what was coming in half of these things. You know, basically how they line up, sometimes you can tell, okay, he'll probably run this. I was sort of guessing most of the time.
Yeah.
You know, and even like, remember the third down and fourth down where they got it on that drive to score? I was like, they're going to run it on one of these downs. They passed both times and they got it on the second one. And I was thinking, the Patriots had to be thinking at least that they'd run it on one of those downs, and they didn't, you know. The Eagles just did a great job of keeping them off balance and then finding the matchup. And like you said, but it's, you know, just a ton of credit has to go to Peterson. He coached circles around Patricia, especially.
Yeah.
You know, there was, and, you know, going back to Butler, you know, all right, say it was a disciplinary issue, you know, because you can't go at it from a schematic issue and say, okay, well, what's working in the first half is not working. These guys who are great in practice are not doing well during the game. You know, so why don't we throw in Butler? So say it was a disciplinary issue. You know, there's – why not just, you know, do it for a half? You know, I think that proved a point.
Exactly. I mean, the what is it, 11 snaps that Johnson Bademosi played?
Right.
Why aren't those 11 snaps Malcolm Butler? You know, and if it was spiteful, if it was arrogance, if it was ego, if it was any of those things, and I'm not saying that it was definitely was. I know the sports radio people and the conspiracy theorists out there are going to say a lot of that. But if it was, then that's just a really shitty way to lose a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a really shitty way for Tom Brady to lose another one. And you feel for the players because they worked so hard to get here, and then they didn't put them in the best chance to succeed. Like they always say, Belichick always says that he does. Yeah. I always put the team in the best position to win. He didn't put the team in the best position to win. And on some degree, you know, I understand that that his thought process in terms of practice and whoever's practicing better should play in the games, and practice is important. All that stuff is true. But at some point, you know, some of these guys and some of these professional athletes are going to play better when the bright lights come on.
Yeah, it's weird.
You know, I don't want to go whole Allen Iverson on it, but like, you know, it's kind of like that where it's like, this guy's a Pro Bowler.
Well, but not even like once you have a half's worth of data to go on,
right?
Then you see these great practice players getting torched up and down the field. Then you might as well put in the guy. I mean, I just don't understand.
I honestly,
there won't be a good answer for me.
There won't be a good answer from anyone. That's the thing that's, you know, I think that's bumming out Patriots fans the most. Is that, you know, there's just really no good answer, and there's no smoking gun so far, at least. I mean, we're taping this on Thursday after the Super Bowl, and so far there hasn't been, you know, he was arrested, he was this, he was, right. You know what I mean? It just kind of seems like got sick of the guy. That the attitude, that the practicing, that all of that stuff, you know. And it reminds me of, you know, another quarterback in Patriots lore here, and Asante Samuel.
Right.
It reminds me of how that ended, where Asante essentially was like, you know, a prima donna by 2007. You know, he had a lot of interceptions. He was, you know, going to get paid, and he was kind of, you know, getting a little big for his bridges, you know, too big for the Patriots system or the Patriots liking. And in the Super Bowl, you know, he dropped the interception in 07 and he didn't have the best game. And, maybe Belichick just said, you know, I'm just not going to do that again.
Right.
I'm not going to put a guy on the field that is, you know, bragging about how much money he's making or, you know, how great he is before the game or acting like he, you know, can just roll out of bed and show up on Sunday and play well, you know.
Which if he did that would be insanely petty.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. But, you know, I think the one thing that, you know, that holds true with this is that, you know, Belichick has said in the past that he is only going to put players on the field that he trusts, right. That he's only going to put players on the field that he feels are ready and prepared to play. And it was clear that he didn't think that Malcolm Butler was prepared to play for whatever right. reason it was. And that's just, I don't know. I mean, if this is any other coach, he's fired.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, and the other thing too, is it was not a like team-wide popular decision either.
No.
Like, because even Rowe said that it was made just before the game.
How do you not, right. And maybe something happened Saturday night and that's why it would happen. But he said that they told him at the national anthem. And that's why Butler is crying on the sideline during the national anthem is because they just told him that he wasn't going to play at all.
Like the whole thing, start to finish, top to bottom, smells funny.
Yeah.
Which is why it's so, why this is going to have legs until forever, until we know. Like,
yeah. I mean, this is going to live in infamy. This is a stain on Belichick's record.
100%. 100%. Because at the end of the day, this comes back to him.
Yeah.
You can't go around blaming, like, Jordan Richards because he shouldn't be out there. It should be Malcolm Butler or Johnson Batamosi missing that tackle. Well, I mean, you know, how often do you see a receiver catch the ball and Butler trailing him, and he comes and make that tackle 100%? He's literally one of the best tacklers on the team. The team had awful tackling issues from start to finish, and he's never in the game. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, they gave up 193 yards after contact.
Yeah.
That was by far the most that they've given up all year.
Yeah.
Right, and they missed 15 tackles. This is, you know, like PFF data.
It felt like 30.
It felt like 30. They missed 15. You know, again, this is, you know, PFF data, and they gave up 200 yards, 193 after contact, which was by far the most they've allowed this season.
It's almost you almost have to try to miss tackles to get that much.
Right. And it was right down the line. You know, it was Jordan Richards missed a tackle. Daron Harmon and Devin McCourty each missed tackles. You know, Malcolm Brown missed a tackle. Johnson Batamosi obviously missed a tackle. I mean, the two that I pointed out, I wrote about it, and the two that I pointed out were obviously the Corey Clement 55-yarder right before the half. They missed two tackles on that play. Jordan Richards misses a tackle, and Daron Harmon gets stiff-armed in the open field by Clement. He gets run over and missed a tackle, and obviously the Batamosi tackle.
Yeah.
And those two were kind of, you know, the picture boys for this issue, but it was all game.
Yeah. You know?
And at the end of the day, and when you really look at it, even though the defense was terrible, if they just tackle at a higher level, they probably win this game.
Right. And I mean, the offense scored 33 points. That should be enough.
Right.
Super Bowl to win. You know, it's just.
Maybe the Eagles make the plays after they make the tackle, the right tackle. Maybe the Eagles make the plays afterwards. You know, you don't know. Right, but at least they could have stopped the bleeding by making some of the tackles. At least Corey Clement's 55-yarder is a 30-yard gain instead of a 55-yard gain. Right. At least they get off the field on that third down if Batamosi makes the tackle. You know, it's baffling. It's baffling that they just completely lost their fundamental football. I mean, special teams was terrible, and the tackling was terrible.
Yeah, it was bad. 100%. So if you want to, we haven't talked much about the other side of the ball because that because that worked. You know, I mean, you know, even you look at the two coordinators in this game and you say, okay, so Patricia goes to the Lions and what do they think now? And especially what he said after the game when it came to Butler, I think Tommy Kern termed it as word vomit. which is kind of how he sort of talks when he explains things. He sort of talks in circles and you don't really get too much. But on the other side, McDaniels, you know, called a good game. Like there was something
really good game.
There are some things you could question with them, but I mean, they scored 33 points. Brady threw for what, 500 what yards?
And 505
yards from Brady. And, you know, look, especially in the second half, I just felt like the offense did everything it needed to do up until with the point where they were put in a situation where they had to, you know, throw every down.
Right.
You know, even then, it's like they were almost in a spot where they could, you know, get to a Hail Mary situation and, you know, tie the game possibly.
Yeah.
So, at what point do you lay this on the offense? I don't think you can at all. You know, I think they did everything asked of them. Most years, what they do in the Super Bowl is good enough to win, and some years win going away. It's, you know, especially, you know, look, they come out of the second half, start of the third quarter, they go to Gronk like crazy. Gronkowski gets in the end zone, and then they, you know, Philadelphia scores, and they go right back down the field with Hogan. And, you know, you just felt like, you know, how the Eagles were working their matchups, the Patriots started working theirs. You never really felt like the offense was going to get, you know, shut down or slow down. I felt like when the Eagles scored that touchdown to make it 41-33, I felt like that was, you know, I felt like that was needed for them to win the game. I thought if it was within a field goal or even just a regular touchdown instead of 8 points, they were going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
I never felt like the Patriots were going to stop scoring either.
Yeah, and, you know, offensively, they torched them. They really did. They the play calling, I know a lot of people were, you know, saying that the play calling in the first half was a little cute. They had a sequence where they called 3 screens out of 4 plays.
Right.
You know, that people had a problem with. You know, when you're playing the best pass rush in the league, screens are going to be a big part of your offense.
Right.
It's just, you know, the way that it works. I understand that a little bit was a little too cute in the first half, and they missed some opportunities in the first half. They could have put up some more points. The main thing that, you know, I look at, you know, just in terms of what they could have done better, I mean, are really little things. You know, the first thing is you know, right before the half, Tom Brady scrambles. You know, that's when you know it's the Super Bowl, because Tom Brady is doing something weird.
Yeah.
You know, he has no timeouts. There's 22 seconds left, and he takes a 6-yard gain and stays, you know, can't get out of bounds. And and the clock just runs out on an opportunity where they could have at least gotten 3 more points and made it a 7-point game going into the half. You know, that was weird. You know, some of the play calls early on were a little bit weird, but really, you know, when you watch it, I mean, the two things that they did the most to kind of mitigate and attack this Eagles defense, crossing routes just unbelievably well. You know, they basically took Hogan and Amendola and they ran them on a shallow and a little bit of a deeper crosser right across the face of the zone that the Eagles were running, and both guys were open some of the time.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of take your pick for Brady, you know, whichever one he wanted to go to. And then the other thing that they did, the play action passing was incredible. 13 yards per attempt off play actions for Brady.
Yeah.
Which is just exceptionally high. So that was a part of the game that I didn't expect, because I thought the Eagles pass rush would be too good to run that much play action. But they obviously saw on tape that it would work, and that they could suck in those linebackers and throw behind them quickly. And that's exactly what they did. You know, they hit the play action, and as soon as Brady's back foot hit the ground, the ball was coming out.
Yeah.
And there was just guys open everywhere. There really was. And you know, I watched a bunch of Eagles games, and also, you know, I have some friends from Philly, and they were telling me that out of all the 19 games that they played, they've never seen guys more wide open than they were in that game against that Eagles defense. I mean, they busted coverage after busted coverage. And, right. And you know, it was they threw in some of the double moves that I talked about. Chris Hogan beat Jalen Mills on a double move, which was cool to see. And then Brandon Cooks, you know, on the play that he got hurt on, beat Ronald Darby on a double move too, just absolutely left him in the dust. You know, there was a lot of really good stuff. And really what it came down to was that because the defense couldn't get any stops, they were constantly having to drive the length of the field, you know, and they had the worst starting field position in a game that they have had all year. Their average starting field position was the 22-yard line.
Yeah.
You know, that's tough to do against a good defense, to drive 75, 80 yards every single time, you know, and that's, I think, what it kind of felt like when, you know, the strip sack happened, was kind of like, you know, how many bites at the apple are you going to take before the pass rush finally gets there?
Right.
You know, and how many times are you going to expect Brady to drive the ball 80 yards? You know, it's tough to do for anybody. And when you look at the strip sack, a lot of, you know, it's upsetting because James White is wide open in the flat. And Brady gets a little greedy. He steps up in the pocket when he didn't have the space, and he gets hit. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, Brady dumps that ball into the flat to James White and just takes it. And takes what the defense has given him. He tried to hold on to the ball for an extra second to hit Gronkowski, and it cost him. And then I thought that a little bit after the strip sack, he was a little flustered.
Oh, yeah.
I think that he was a little bit flustered. I think that he couldn't believe what just happened, and couldn't believe that he fumbled. And, you know, on that final drive of the game, even though the reverse on the special teams on the kickoff was garbage, another garbage coaching decision, you know, there were some chances that he didn't take. You know, on the first play was the biggest one. He ends up throwing across his body to James White, incomplete. And if you watch the playback, Gronk is standing right in front of him, wide open, with nobody there. And he actually has blockers downfield. I think it might have actually been a design screen to Gronkowski. And he has Amendola and Hogan are downfield waiting to block for him. And Brady sees him. He's right in front of him. And he, for some reason, flings it across his body for no reason. You know, it was kind of little things like that, that after the fumble, you kind of just – he was rattled.
Yeah.
And not saying that they, you know, that they necessarily were in a great spot, because they obviously weren't. They were backed up and had no timeouts and all that. But a minute with Tom Brady is a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And they had a full minute. They had 1 minute and 3 seconds, and they had no timeouts, but they have the best, you know, 1 minute drill guy in the game. Mm-hmm. And they just couldn't make the plays. So if you want to nitpick about the offense, then obviously the last 2 minutes and 30 seconds is where you're going to turn of the entire game. But, you know, obviously not their fault by any stretch of the imagination. I want to get back to Belichick real quick before we wrap up. Between this decision to bench Butler and then just to have the defense ill-prepared on every level, pretty much.
Yeah.
And then the decision to trade Jimmy Garoppolo for a second-round pick. Mm. When you put those two things together, it's fireable. And this is the greatest coach of all time. So it's like, I'm not saying that they should fire him by any stretch of the imagination. Please do not fire him. But what I'm saying is that if this is, you know, another coach in another organization, if this is, you know, a guy like a Dan Quinn or someone like that, or, you know,
somebody that doesn't have Belichick's resume.
Yeah, thanks. Someone that doesn't have his resume. they might get fired the next day after this game. Right? I mean, am I crazy? I mean, he traded a franchise quarterback for a second round pick. That's a general manager move that is a fireable offense. Maybe imagine if another general manager had made that trade.
Right.
And then in the Super Bowl, he makes a decision out of either pettiness or team rules or whatever you want to put.
Something.
That clearly cost them the game.
Right, yeah. You take those two things alone and they are head scratchers. They just don't add up when you look at what he's been able to do over the years, and then you look at these things. To me, it's really the Butler thing the most, you know, because with Garoppolo, it might not have been, you know, all on him, given what, you know, Kraft's role in it was. So in that respect, I could take a little bit of pressure off Belichick for that. But when you're looking at this Butler thing, it's a Super Bowl. You don't deactivate the guy. You just bench him. And why? Nobody knows. There's no good answer yet. I don't think there will be a good answer. It's something that...
Power play.
It's just a total head scratcher, man. I don't get it. I don't get it. Even when people explain this or say this might have happened, none of this stuff is
worthy of it.
Is verified. You know what I mean? Like all this stuff, all this off the field stuff that has been thrown out there, not verified. You know, like some people pointed out, like if he's out at these concerts or wherever, not one photo. We don't see one photo of Malcolm Butler at the Super Bowl, you know, at a nightclub or wherever. Not one photo of this guy. I mean, come
on.
One
Snapchat. This is 2018.
Exactly.
We're all taking pictures.
We can't verify a single one of these claims against him, and I've heard them. You know, there's people that have, you know, come to me with stuff, and I just don't, you know, I can't just come out and, you know, say, okay, well, that did happen. I've got to find out for sure. So I'm still waiting for a good reason to keep Malcolm Butler off the field. And it's almost worse if they just had it as a schematic thing. Like they just thought he couldn't do it.
There's no way.
Yeah.
There's no way.
If they thought he couldn't help at all on the field, and that's why they kept him off the field, then that's worse.
Then we have to worry about, like, is Belichick done? And I don't think that. So I don't, you know, like, I don't think that that's what it is. And the way that he just made him stand out there, and the way that he made it was like torture.
Yeah.
It was like torture. And at some point, I almost thought that I was just going to see Malcolm put himself in the game.
Right.
You know, like at some point I thought that he was literally going to run into the huddle, tap Jordan Richards on the shoulder and say, get the hell out of here.
Yeah, I know.
I got this. And I would have been like, go Malcolm, like, get out there, dude.
Yeah.
Like it is unbelievable. And the thing that stinks about it even more, I mean, everything stinks about it, but this is a guy that should have been a Patriot for life. This is the Patriot way. An undrafted rookie plays his ass off, makes a huge play, a franchise play in the Super Bowl, and then is a starter, a Pro Bowl level starter for 2 years, a solid starter for a third season. He's young. I mean, this guy is
never once did anything
wrong. Never. And I understand, from what I understand, is that, you know, all season long he's had some attitude issues. And all season long he's had a little bit of motivation issues and a kind of a feeling of like, you know, I don't necessarily want to be here because of what happened last off season. And, you know, I get all of that. But to get to this point where you're benching him in the Super Bowl for everyone to see on national TV, the most watched event, you know, in the world every single year, you know, to get to that point, what, how did we get there? With a guy that not, the pick aside against the Seahawks, right? Just from a career arc standpoint, is resembles everything that, that the Patriots resemble. I mean, he's exactly the same situation. You know, obviously not as successful or as long, but like this is what got Tom Brady started too. You know, right. this is what got guys like Tom Brady started. This is what Troy Brown was. This is right. what all of these guys were, homegrown, talented players that are hidden gems that they found out of nowhere that went on to be Pro Bowl caliber players. That yeah. guy should have been a Patriot for life. Julian Edelman, you know, Wes Welker even though he obviously came later in his career. You know, all of these guys, we can go down the line. That and the issue is where did it go wrong, you know? And
well, I just look at it from a perspective of look at what this guy did. He won you a Super Bowl.
Literally.
He legit gave you a Super Bowl title, and this is how you send him out?
In that respect alone, it seems like it was a power trip.
Yeah.
Like, you made your name in the Super Bowl, now I'm going to bury you.
Right.
You know, like you...
Incredibly petty and spiteful.
It really was. And, you know, you give the guy the benefit of the doubt. He's won 7 rings total, 5 as the Patriots head coach. He's the best head coach in the league by a wide margin.
Yeah.
And you obviously can't, you know, you can't fire him. You can't want to move on from him. But after this game, there was an unsettled feeling around the Patriots of like, is Belichick going to retire?
Right. You know,
is this it? Because there was already issues. There was already tension. There was already issues with Tom Brady. There was already issues. And the issues with Tom Brady are kind of similar to the issues with Malcolm Butler in the respect that he had the issues with, you know, who Tom had become.
Right.
You know, the it was an ego thing. And, you know, it kind of had that unsettling feeling. And then Josh McDaniels all of a sudden does an about face on the Colts. And right. I obviously don't know. This isn't source material or anything, but it feels like 2018 is his swan song.
Yeah, it's got, I mean, yeah. Yeah, especially with the McDaniels thing. I'd put it above 50% that it is. He just doesn't want to go out
like that.
Like he'd go out getting coached circles around by Doug Peterson.
By surfer Andy Reid.
Yeah.
I wear flip-flops to the damn podium. Like,
it's yeah.
We're talking about. Oh, man. I mean, this game will forever, you know.
It's a big stain.
It's a big stain, and it stinks that it's a big stain because, you know, in some respects, when you get to the Super Bowl 8 times, when you play in all these playoff games, you're going to lose something. You know, you're going to lose every once in a while. You know, you're not going to win them all. And so it stinks to say that every single time they lose now and they don't, you know, they're not the team that wins the Super Bowl. It's a stain. But it's just the way that it happened.
Right. And how many times are you going to see Belichick make a roster move or decision in a game and everybody's going to side with everybody else but Belichick?
Yeah, I mean,
that's what you're seeing right now is you're seeing people question Belichick and say, okay, what are what are you doing? You know, right. Like and like on the Instagram posts, you're seeing players, you know, like the posts where they're questioning the coaching moves. I thought I'd never see that, never, and that's coming out in droves. There's a very definite split in the locker room over all this, and you can just it's incredible. Like
you can't blame them.
Yeah, like and the thing is, if you would have said before the game that the Eagles would win and, you know, Butler would play and, you know, they would just win and the Patriots would lose, that would be one thing. But if you would say, okay, the Patriots would lose, there'd be enough of a controversy where there'd be a locker room split and there'd be questions surrounding, you know, all of this, that, like, this whole unsettled feeling you see right now, I never would have expected that. And it happened in a matter of however many hours.
Yeah, I mean, I really thought on Monday when he called that press conference at 11 a.m., I was like, man, this could be it. Like, right. This could be him resigning the position. And I didn't think it would happen. I thought that there was a good chance it wouldn't happen. It obviously didn't happen. But, I mean, it really felt like it. It really felt like it was coming, because this was one time where it went way too far. Where Bill's ego, you know, it's gotten in the way in some other times, but it's never affected the game this big, you know, at this level. You know, obviously the Wes Welker foot thing, benching that happened is kind of similar, but that was a regular season game, and he sat him down for like a quarter, and then he was playing on special teams, and then he came out in the second half and had a great game, you know, right. and that was just completely different. This was unbelievable. I mean, no coach. This is one of the most ridiculous coaching decisions in the history of sports, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, and
defensible.
It's really, he's really lucky. He's really lucky that he's had so much success, because any other coach would be gone.
It's crazy. It is crazy.
And man, I mean, I hope that and stuff about the locker room. I mean, I don't blame them one bit. If I was the players, and it's interesting because they don't show you the locker room stuff after a loss, obviously. They only should let you in after a win. I can't even imagine what he said to the team after the game.
No.
I can't even imagine what he said. I mean, if I was the players, I'd be, why did you do it? You know? Yeah. And it kind of goes back to that, you know, and we're going to wrap up here in a second, but it kind of goes back to that 4th-and-2 decision against the Colts
right.
Way back. And remember the video that came out about him explaining to the team following week, like he felt like he owed them an explanation. So he explained to the players exactly why he went for it on 4th-and-2. And you saw the logic. And this, I would just wondering if he gave even the players the explanation that they deserved, because we're fans or we're media, and all of us want answers, and the media wants to dig for answers, and the fans are, you know, outraged over it, and rightfully so. But at the end of the day, you know, it's their livelihoods, it's their careers, it's their lives, it's their Super Bowl that they lost out on.
Yeah.
It's not ours.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there's, you know, fans really care about the team, but it's not even close to how much right. players do.
So, right. I mean, think about all the work, all the off-season practices, all the weights lifted, every mile ran, you know, all the way back from the end of last Super Bowl to now, all the preparation that went into the 2017 season, and to throw it away like that, you know, you got to answer to the players. You know, I think that they all deserve to know exactly what went on with Malcolm Butler and what led to this. And it turns out that it sounds about, you know, with all the Instagram stuff and whatnot, that they didn't agree with whatever explanation they got.
Yeah.
And that's tough. And I don't think that you're ever going to hear any players really come out and say exactly what happened until maybe years from now. But eventually, I think we're going to find out what happened, you know, whether it's in a 30 for 30, 10 years from now or whatever the case may be. And maybe that will, you know, allow us to kind of live with it. But for now, I mean, we get it. You and I, you know, both understand why Patriots Nation is reeling right now after this decision. And, you know, it is what it is. But looking ahead here.
Equipment.
Looking ahead a little bit here, you know, we still have another year, luckily, 2018. We're on to 2018, and we can look ahead to that and try to do this all over again. And, you know, we'll Adam and I will be here during the draft and during the combine and free agency and all that good stuff, and we'll break it down and kind of, you know, show where we think, you know, the holes are and how the Patriots will fill them and all that good stuff and all the off-season stuff that I really enjoy. I mean, I think it's one of the best parts about you know, sports and about the NFL is the off season, the draft, and all that stuff. So maybe we'll come back next week, Adam, and we'll kind of do some off season needs and reset and kind of look at it. But you know, I think all of us are in agreement on this podcast, at least, that you know, this is one that's going to be tough to swallow for a long time. I think you that.
And I've established this before. I'm not a Patriots fan. You know, I like covering the team. So I really enjoyed how exciting the game was and stuff like that. But if you are a fan of the team, I can understand how crazy you are over this.
We're all crushed, all right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so, but, you know, still, it was a fun season. And going forward, there's a lot to look forward to if you're a fan in terms of, you know, watching this team. There's a lot of different things that they can do to get back to this point and still finish the job next time.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has that feel, and we've been in this position before, but, you know, you climb all the way up to the top of the mountain, you're right there, you can feel it, and then you just fall all the way back down, and it's, you know, back to square one. But in this case, you know, with the Patriots, it's not back to square one. You know, it's really not. It feels like that, and obviously you have to go and play a whole new season and all that good stuff, but at the same time, they're going to be back in January next year, and we'll do this all again, and we'll roll the dice again, and hopefully Bill Belichick just plays the best guys. That's all you can hope for, right? Until next week, we will get into this off season and break it down and kind of plug some holes here for the Patriots. I'm sure that it will be mostly on the defensive side of the ball. But we'll do our best to kind of get you guys ready for all that kind of stuff. But thanks again, once again, for listening to us all season. You know, as a fan, I'm sorry that it ended this way. But at the same time, it was a great season. Another great season of Patriots football, another Super Bowl appearance. I mean, it doesn't get much better than this. It really doesn't, being a fan of this team. So thanks for listening all year. And Adam and I will be back, you know, periodically through the off season to reset and I'll do all that good stuff. But until then, for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho. H to the OV. I used to move snowflakes by the OZ. I guess even back then you could call me CEO of the ROC. Ho. Fresh out the fryer.